And now listen to the second broadcast. Nature or Nurture. Good afternoon, students. I am pleased to welcome you to our annual conference for psychologists. Today, I am going to speak to you about some research concerning the very central question of nature versus nurture. Many of us are interested in learning more about ourselves. Popular magazines offer us various so-called psychological tests, which are supposed to help us analyze our personality. Scientists have also been trying to find an answer to the question, what makes us who we are? Most scientists agree that two major factors determine our personality traits: the genetic factor, which we call nature, namely the qualities or characteristics that we are born with, and the environmental factor, such as education and family, which we call nurture. Scientists have been trying to understand how these two factors influence one's personality. Extensive research has been conducted on identical twins, because they have exactly the same genes. An especially interesting twin study is being conducted by Minnesota researchers. It is called the Minnesota Study of Twins Reared Apart. Researchers have been comparing 56 pairs of identical twins who were separated shortly after birth. Some of these twins had not seen each other for as long as 34 years when the study brought them together. The Minnesota Study of Twins Reared Apart examined the personalities and differing abilities of the twins. In addition, they participated in long interviews. The twins were asked questions about such topics as childhood experiences, hobbies, fears, musical tastes, and social attitudes. I'd like to tell you about some amazing similarities that were found. The twins with the most different backgrounds are Oscar Storr and Jack Uffe. Born in Trinidad to a Jewish father and a German mother, they were separated shortly after birth. The mother took Oscar to Germany, where he was raised by his grandmother as a Catholic and a Nazi. Jack remained with his father and was raised as a Jew. He even spent part of his youth on an Israeli kibbutz. There was no contact between the families, and the two brothers led very different lives. They were in their late 40s when they participated in the study. Remarkable similarities were immediately noticed when the pair showed up. They were wearing very similar clothes. They both had mustaches and wire-rimmed glasses. Their gestures and temperaments were similar. They shared the same taste in food. They were both fond of spicy dishes. Strangely enough, both twins liked to dip buttered toast in their coffee and enjoyed surprising people by sneezing in elevators. Another pair of twins with different backgrounds are two British housewives who were separated during World War II. They grew up in very different kinds of homes. Both twins, who had never met before, arrived for their interviews wearing 7 rings on their fingers. Of course, this doesn't mean that there are toast-dipping genes or ring-loving genes, but such similarities do indicate that there are some personality characteristics that we inherit from our parents. However, in order to truly understand how personality is formed, it is also necessary to consider environmental factors such as the kind of family in which the child was raised, his or her relationship with his or her parents, other children in the family, etc. The nature-nurture debate goes on, but it is clear that both factors play a vital role in shaping our personality. So it seems that what really makes us who we are is a combination of both our genetic makeup and the environment in which we were raised. Thank you for your attention. After the break, you will be able to ask questions. Finish answering the questions. Practice Paper 3, Part 2. Access to information from spoken texts. You are about to hear the text of your listening comprehension test, which will be spoken twice. Before the first broadcast, you may look at the questions. You may start answering the questions after the first broadcast. Now listen to the first broadcast. The Spanish Flu.
Go to any cemetery in the world and you will undoubtedly find many graves dating from the autumn of 1918. Between September and November of that year, as the First World War came to an end, the Spanish flu swept the globe, killing between 20 million and 40 million people. More Americans died of the flu over the next few months than were killed during the First World War, the Second World War, the Korean War, and the Vietnam War combined. The Spanish flu, as it came to be called, reached every continent and virtually every country on the map, going wherever ships sailed or cars or trucks or trains traveled. It killed so many people so quickly that some cities were forced to turn their buses and streetcars into transportation for bodies, and others buried their dead in mass graves. There are seven graves out of all these millions that stand out. They are the graves of seven miners who died in a tiny mining town on one of the Norwegian islands. What is so special about these graves? Being less than 800 miles from the North Pole, the ground is frozen so that the bodies of the seven miners are well preserved. An expedition, which consisted of scientists from Canada, Britain, the United States, and Norway, went to this tiny island, dug into the graves, and collected samples from the bodies. They hoped that those samples would provide more information about the deadliest virus ever. Because the virus is so deadly, the group members were extremely careful. They left the bodies where they had been, in their graves, and performed the autopsies in the ground of the church cemetery. The diggers were wearing space suits, and a tent was built over the graves to prevent the possibility of infection. The samples they took from the bodies were sent to laboratories in London and Washington. The scientists hoped to be able to answer some basic questions about the Spanish flu. What kind of virus caused it? Why it was so deadly? And if we can successfully vaccinate against it if it recurs? Outbreaks of deadly flu other than the Spanish flu of 1918 have been responsible for hundreds of thousands of deaths around the world. The Asian flu, for example, killed 70,000 Americans in 1957, and the Hong Kong flu killed 33,000 during the winter of 1968-69. In 2003, about 8,000 people worldwide became sick with SARS, a viral disease that caused the death of 800 people. That's why the mission of the expedition was so important. If another deadly flu epidemic emerges, we may have much better tools to fight it, thanks in part to seven young miners who died on an Arctic island almost 90 years ago.